Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our patrons, this is your extended, ad-free, higher-quality MP3'd version of this week's show. But if you're not yet a patron, but would like to become one and get all those things and do various other things, like listen and interact with us live, head to patreon.com/UK Tech. Thank you to our new patrons for this week. Justin Dietrich. Oh, goodness me.
Dietrich.
Dietrich, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
I'm glad one of us has a brain. Thank you, Justin Dietrich, for joining us. And Nick as well. We don't know your surname, but if you're Nick and you've just subscribed, you know who we're referring to. To whom we are referring, I should say. And also thank you to the continued support we've had from Al Struthers, Adam McCauley, Charlotte Stigall, Chris Allen, Heather. We'll keep reading names every week, but we don't want to only acknowledge those who have recently joined the life raft that is the Patreon page.
What did Adam do to get two mentions? Because he's in there twice.
I pressed Command V an additional time.
Right, I see.
Yes. Now, some people may have heard about some changes coming to the Patreon platform. And indeed, if you haven't heard and are hearing this for the first time, do check out the interview Tom Merritt, our good friend on Daily Tech News Show, did with the CEO of Patreon, Jack Conti, this week. It's on the DTNS feed. You can check that out. It does go into more detail. It effectively doesn't change anything for free or patron, free listeners or patron listeners. So no one needs to worry about any change at all. What will change potentially is what we decide to change. And we've been doing Patreon now for over 2 years. And so we are now in the process of just making sure that what we're offering is what people actually want and value. So now is a really great time to think whether you are a patron or whether you kind of thought about being, but it just hasn't quite felt right for you, to let us know what you like or dislike or would like to have offered or whatever. It's an open, we are an open book, aren't we, Ian?
We are. And if you want to pay £100 a month and then I can send you some abuse on Twitter or something like that, I'm up for that.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I'm actually quite nice, really.
Yes, he is a lot nicer than his Twitter account makes him out to be. But hello at TechPodcast is the place to send that, any thoughts you have on our Patreon offerings. And essentially, you know, we're looking at how can we add value. If you're a patron, you obviously know what you get already, but how could we add more value to you? You know, what is it you really value about the show? And similarly, obviously, for people who aren't patrons but might be, you know, what could we offer you that might persuade you to join us that could give you extra value? Do let us know, and we will obviously be consulting everyone before we make any kind of changes over the next few weeks. Ian, let's dive headfirst into the news, and we're going to talk about scooters, which, as you know, really tickles my fancy.
Yes,
every week.
A scooter fancier.
That's right, yes. The banning of electric scooters on British roads is being reconsidered after the UK government said it was opening, quote, the biggest regulatory review in a generation of current mobility laws, some of which date back to 1835, and specifically the UK Highways Act of 1835, which I have read huge swathes of for my sins, and I'll explain why in a little bit. The government said this week that it wanted to start the process of modernising existing legislation, which was proving to be a bit of a barrier to innovation. It's going to also offer 90 million of Her Majesty's finest pounds to fund some trials of a range of technologies in the so-called mobility space. So this isn't restricted specifically to electric scooters. This is also things like little delivery robots, maybe, that are going to drive parcels across the ground for you. It could affect apparently something that I've never really heard of before, and I don't know what the name is now, but they are basically electric bikes that have a kind of big old storage space on the front, and they're used for like delivery instead of vans. So it encompasses all of that, as well as undoubtedly things that we don't know. I obviously am very, very excited about this. My sort of excitement had cold water poured on it ever so slightly when a spokeswoman for the government sent me a statement that said there's no current plans to bring forward legislation to legalize e-scooters. Really, this is an announcement that they are now going to look at it, which could then mean down the line we could potentially have some change. But it is a good one. And Jesse Norman, he's a British Transport Minister, he said that we're potentially at a pivotal moment for the future of transport, with revolutionary technologies creating huge opportunities. And the government wants to take advantage of that. So it's good news, but it's good news a long way off.
Well, I mean, this is the frustrating thing about this legislation. I mean, I don't think it needs to take very long for them to decide that actually it's quite a good idea to get as many cars off the roads as possible. Now, having a scooter scheme in London with electric scooters would mean that people could use scooters instead of getting taxis. I would love to do that. That would be a dream come true for me. I like to walk where possible, but there are some distances in London where it's just not practical, or I'm too tired at the end of the day or whatever. So I hope the idea of being able to either jump on an e-bike, a rental e-bike, or a rental scooter, it just really appeals to me. I think it's a smart decision. I think it could cut down enormously on traffic in the city.
Well, it would definitely cut down on congestion. And in fact, I read a figure the other day that congestion in 2018 cost the taxpayer £8 billion.
Yeah,
I mean, that's according to government figures, but
I can't cite the numbers, but I know that there was some statistic recently that pollution is killing a huge number of people more than smoking. Now, that's not to say that smoking isn't deadly, because obviously it is, but the point being, air pollution is such a big problem that it is killing people, literally killing people.
And it's the invisible killer. Yeah. And the difference is that people choose to smoke, and people generally choose to smoke knowing the risks, whereas you often don't have a chance, or rather you don't have a choice about, you know, where you're breathing.
No, absolutely. And we don't let children smoke, but we do let children walk around the city, and that, you know, it's a terrible thing. And also, you know, we look at places like China and we think, oh crikey, that's bad, because you can see the visible, you know, smog. We don't have that in London.
Oh, Chief, we do. It's not as bad, certainly, but but you can see the pollution in London.
Yeah, and it's terrible, and it needs to go away. And it will only go away when we offer people alternative methods for getting around, which, you know, and of course, no one's pretending that electric cars or, you know, scooters are pollution-free, because they have to generate electricity somewhere. But I would rather that was done in a controlled manner, somewhere where we know how the air moving around affects the pollution. And, you know, I'm very pro nuclear, at least for now. I mean, I'd like to see renewable energy being more common, and by that I mean wind farms and solar farms, and that will happen. But there will always be a need for something to fill in when there's not enough natural resource.
Yeah, but this, you know. I mean, this is part of that broader conversation about the need to move to, you know, more sustainable, less polluting forms of transport. This is very specifically focusing on part of the problem that arises when a law isn't properly overhauled for nearly 200 years. This is, you know, the UK Highways Act. Now, I've had to read a lot of this because I cover the mobility space for Bloomberg in Europe, and I cover the scooter space a lot here as part of that, obviously, in fact, almost exclusively. And this law, it sort of puts scooters in this rock and a hard place, where the type of device that it is by law means that you have to get tax, insurance, and a license for it. But because of that, you can't be granted a... It needs something that you physically cannot be given in order to use it, but you also can't use it on pathways and things, because it's exclusively for the use of, you know, carriages, and you can't take... I mean, the wording is like you can't take an ass or a mule or anything like that. I mean, how many people are walking mules around?
Well, they're not allowed.
No, and I mean, even
I would bring my ass into London all the time if I was able.
But, you know, back in the day, that caused another problem with horse poo.
Yeah, that's cars cleaned up the city, believe it or not, because horse poo was such a huge problem. Mm.
We could see that. That's the difference.
We could see it.
You can say, I'm not walking down that street because it's...
But also, we, you know, we're talking about a time where pollution was considerable. So there were other issues as well, you know, from burning coal and all that kind of jazz. But I mean, it's frustrating. It takes so long. That's the problem. And I do also worry a little bit about how that will work, because obviously it makes sense to have scooters using bus lanes. But will that have an impact on the speed of buses?
We have bicycle lanes. We do. So miles and miles of bicycle lanes all around London.
And some of them are very, very good, actually. I used them a bit when I was testing some bikes a while back.
I think you spoke about that at the time.
Flipping heck. The going on that cycle lane from near here, actually, from down on Lower Thames Street.
Can you explain for the ladies and gentlemen where exactly you mean?
Yeah, actually, it's as you're approaching Tower Bridge in the sort of city of London,
which is the one people think is London Bridge, but isn't.
No, it does start at sort of, it starts at Tower Bridge and goes down past London Bridge, and then it goes along the river to pretty much Waterloo. So for me, when I was I had a little fold-up bike, it was perfect. I hopped on the cycle lane, stayed out of traffic all the way, got to Waterloo, folded up the bike, put the bike on the train, went back to the house. I did an electric bike trial where I cycled all the way from home to Lower Thames Street, again London Bridge, not Tower Bridge, and it was brilliant. I was a little bit tired, but the electric just keeps you from breaking out into a horrifying sweat.
We've talked about the benefits of electric bikes before, but the thing is with the scooters, I mean, yes, we have to have trials, yes, every country is different, but the thing is, we've got so many great points of reference for how this can be beneficial to a city, as well as many reasons why they are detrimental to a city. A lot of people don't like dockless bikes and scooters cluttering up pavements and roads. But you look at something like Paris. You know, Paris has a lot of scooters in it.
Yeah.
And the scooter companies themselves have a lot of anonymized bulk big data that is shared to the city, so the city can look at, you know, what routes are people taking, why are they not taking public transport there. Maybe a bus lane could help here. You know, it's actively being used essentially to gauge and measure where congestion is taking place with people rather than just you know, cars, and that data can help a city become more efficient. And those are some of the benefits that often don't get spoken about. But particularly for a city like London, that's, you know, it's been here for centuries, and many of the pathways that roads take are the same pathways that were there in the 1500s, and were built for people and horses, not Teslas and electrocutors. Yeah. So there are all these benefits in addition to the detrimental side effects of having scooters that we already know about. So I'd like to think that we could at least take some lessons from our Parisian neighbours and at least expedite some of the trials of these systems.
I would say that I don't know why we've not gone down more of the American route, where you're allowed to do all these kind of things automatically. It's just part of, you know, there's no reason that, how is a bike really different to an electric scooter, really?
Tons of ways, mate. Number one, you're not astride a scooter.
Well, no, but I don't mean like that. I mean, in terms of the impact to other people. So, for example, if I'm riding an electric scooter down the same bit of road, so just say on a normal road as a guy on a bike, how is that different? How is that more dangerous? How is that, you know, why do you need a license to pootle along at, like, sort of a little bit over walking speed or cycling speed?
I mean, as a scooter user, I think I can offer some suggestions. I mean, number one, speed. Number two, if you're on a bicycle, you can definitely remove one arm to indicate, whereas on a scooter, if you take your hand off, it's very likely, because of the wheel size, you might you know fall over.
But that, I mean, okay, yeah, sure. I mean, but I'm also sort of thinking about, yeah, so I can see that argument, and that's valid. It wouldn't be very difficult to put little indicators on a scooter. I mean, I know they're not the highest things in the world, so that makes it kind of difficult,
and they do exist.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's more about the fact that if you're prepared to take that risk, if you want, because like boosted boards, you know, the electric skateboards.
I see some of those around here.
Well, you're not really not allowed to use them. I mean, really, the police are just not going to take an interest, I don't think. For a start, they probably wouldn't realise. But also, if you're on that, you know that that's not the safest proposition. But those people are skateboarders. They know that skateboarding is dangerous.
Yeah, but the thing is, I've seen those things go...
Oh, they know, go quick.
And they'll go through traffic, and I've seen them weaving in and out. And And to be fair, I've seen cyclists do that. Yeah. I've seen people on scooters.
It's no different. If you're on the road, I think you just have to obey the rules of the road. And
I just sort of think you've got something to hold on to with a bike or a scooter or something like that. Same with Segway. In fact, the Segways were specifically banned, and it was the Highways Act, UK Highways Act of 1835, that was brought into court to, you know, as a reason why Segways should be banned. So it's not even like this dated piece of legislature where, you know, because there are some laws that, I don't know, you can shoot a Welshman with a crossbow as long as they're under an archway near a church and have wronged your ass, I don't know, or your horse or your mule. These silly or you're not allowed to hang a double bed out of a window if it's over a pavement. I mean, that's just common sense, but apparently is written into law in British history somewhere. It's not one of those sorts of laws. Like, it does get used. It's just that it's not really been updated for
those laws are obviously, you know, redundant. They're not valid. They just haven't been taken out of the statute.
But this would be a great thing for anyone listening. Why don't you send in your favourite archaic law or Google some and send in your favourites. Maybe next week we can read out some bizarre.
I can help some people here because I believe there's a Tom Scott video on that exact subject.
Who is Tom Scott?
Tom Scott's the guy that I used to do Gadget Geeks with, but he's a very popular YouTuber. Kids will know who he is.
Ah, okay.
But yeah, he's good and he does a lot of videos like this. It's fascinating.
Let's find some laws then, you know, the top 10 text message laws that should be updated for the modern age.
Yeah.
I think there is one where if you go to take a university exam in Cambridge or Oxford,
you're allowed a sword and a muffin.
No. If you go in with a sword and a suit of armour, you're allowed 1 pint of local ale to consume while you pass your exam. The problem is it's catch 22 and that you'll get arrested for taking a sword into a school.
Yes.
So you have to weigh up the options. Do I want to be arrested for taking weaponry into an educational establishment, or knowing you'll get a free beer, or the opposite?
It's not illegal to own a sword, though, is it?
Our shared friend Marta, in fact, voice of some of our owns multiple swords. She's a swordswoman.
So, I mean, okay, you wouldn't probably take it out with you. That would be a bit of a mistake.
No,
but carrying it in obviously people do fencing. I mean, that's a bit different because those swords aren't sharp, are they? They're blunted and, you know, have a ball, so you just poke at people.
I think you could do some very serious harm. I know she doesn't, and it can be very romantic. I don't think she'll mind me saying that. I think she had a date on Valentine's Day and went axe throwing.
Yes, and also you can open a bottle of champagne with a sword. So what you do is you strike the rim where, you know, where the cork goes, you know, you've got that little bulge around the outside of the
bottle. I don't drink as much champagne as you. I'm familiar.
Strike that in the right way with a sword and the end just breaks off. And then it's very cool. So you could just say, if you got pulled over by the police, well, I'm just off to do some champagne opening.
Well, I think we'll use some of these stories to illustrate part of the problem with the following story. But first, a bit of different audio. An MP has been ridiculed on social media after he suggested all knives should be fitted with GPS trackers. This is according to a story on the BBC. Scott Mann, NN, Conservative MP for North Cornwall, said on Twitter there should be a national database, quote, like we do with guns. His tweet attracted thousands of comments, the BBC wrote, with some saying Mr. Mann was not the sharpest knife in the drawer. New figures, of course, have shown that knife crime in England and Wales is at its highest for nearly a decade, 9 years, in fact. And so it's with a very great deal of awareness of the seriousness from which I think this well-intentioned tweet derives. There is a terrible problem with knife crime in Britain, and many, many people have been in the news recently who have been victim to this. But it is important to remember that this is a member of parliament for a constituency that may very well have had issues with knife crime, and this is potentially reflective of the kind of debates that are being taken into Commons as a result of him being voted. Now, I want to say from the top that I do honestly believe that his feelings here were reflective of a genuine desire to help cut down
on
knife crime.
He did actually say that afterwards.
Like, did he?
I mean, to be fair to him, he did take this quite well. And there was a video that followed it up with one of his colleagues reading him some of the responses. And he looked suitably ashamed of his original point. But you're right. I think it came from a good place.
Okay.
It's just, it's an ill thought out idea.
I do think so. But I also think that it's a great example of how the immediacy of social media can illustrate a terrible idea and perhaps stop it in its tracks. Some of those, in fact, we could do a little bit of role play, if you like, with one of these. There was a tweet here from Mike McKinley. Would you like to? Shall I be the first line? You want to be the second? I'll be odds. You can be evens.
Yeah, okay.
There's been a stabbing.
Quick, get me the GPS for every knife in a 3-mile radius.
Okay, it says there are 120,000 of them, mostly in kitchens.
Bollocks! Thought we had them all.
Can you ask those young lads with the machete?
No, they've got a mackerel. They've been fishing.
Right, now the reason that was funny is that it had been suggested by Mr. Mann that there could be exceptions to a rule. For example, if somebody had taken a knife because they're going fishing and therefore need knives, maybe they can be exempt from the need to have GPS. So there have been lots of great memes reshared on social media of hooded youths in back streets holding gigantic superimposed carp and salmon and just huge fish, and that this becomes a way to circumvent the law. And there are some great examples on there. There are people who have said, why stop with knives? Let's install GPS trackers on every fork too. To which somebody replied, we need to stop the use of brute forks, which I thought, as a lover of wordplay,
very good.
Was great. Lots of references, of course, to Alan Partridge, one with a screenshot of him speaking into a dictaphone saying, knives with GPS trackers, obvious exemptions for fishing, etc., which is a very Partridgean quote.
Yes, you know, very.
There were some other ones that were very funny as well. But a more sensible one from Ray Verma, who tweeted, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever had to read about our epidemic on knife crime. It's not the problem of the knife itself, but the person who wields it. It's a lack of responsibility and lack of common sense by the individual, and the issues beyond are much deeper. 100%, and that's kind of the British echo of, it's not guns that kill people, it's people.
Yeah, and I don't believe, I think that's a stupid argument. I mean, I think that bit of it's a stupid argument, because knives are kitchen implements primarily. They're used for chopping tomatoes. Yeah. You can't chop a tomato with a gun. A gun is designed to kill people. So the ownership of guns by private citizens, I personally believe, is a mistake. Now, I'm not going to convince anyone that that's the way they should go. The Americans are quite certain that they want their guns, and you know, ultimately
some Americans are quite certain they want their guns.
I know, but you know, it's not going to change. I don't believe that there is a, well, I'm just in a Twitter argument with a bunch of morons about the fact that, you know, we've got a massive knife crime problem, which we do, but we also have a knife crime problem because the police budgets have been cut to the bone. We've had austerity that's reduced, you know, the ability of people to, you know, if they can't work, to have some sort of an income. We're introducing stupid universal credit systems that are depriving people of money, and you know, there are issues that are not related to knives themselves. And of course, we've cut police numbers massively, and we expected that somehow not to have an impact. If there are no police around on the streets keeping an eye on people, then this sort of thing will happen.
Glasgow
in Scotland had a huge knife problem, treated it like a disease, and has reduced it massively. You would be much safer in Glasgow now than you would have been 20 years ago, and that was because they worked out what the problem was and they addressed it. We could easily do that, but it requires money and it requires policing.
And for just $20 a month to our patrons, you can get a version of the show that doesn't contain any political commentary.
That's a nice funding level. I like that.
Which we do like to keep out of the show in general. But yeah, I mean, the reason I wanted to talk about this isn't because, I mean, I've never been a victim of knife crime. I do not know any victim. I don't believe I know any victims of knife crime. I am inequipped to make any kind of smart comment on the issue, having not dealt with it personally. However, I do know that we have an epidemic of knife-related crime, and I do believe that this gentleman was trying to make a good point. But, and here's the bit, this is the bit that justifies the mocking, is that the very fact that this was a suggestion underscores a fundamental lack of understanding about the nature of technology and the way with which it can be used to tackle serious crime.
Well, this is what I wrote in my Forbes piece that you didn't reference at all in the intro.
Didn't know you'd still writing for Forbes.
Yes, I am. I said exactly that. I said we've got the same situation now with Brexit, in that the suggestion was that to overcome... I'm sorry about the politics, but this is not really a political point. The suggestion was that we would have the border between Northern and Southern Ireland, or Northern Ireland and Ireland, could be overcome by a technological solution. There was no indication of what that technological solution was, and people who are into technology, specifically that kind of technology, said there is no solution to this, that is a fantasy.
I've got a solution.
Go on.
Attach GPS to every Irishman.
Funnily enough, I think that is part of the idea, is that you know, trucks would have to have some sort of tracking, and that there would be, you know. But
God, I was joking.
No, but it is ridiculous, and it has been people in the know have suggested it does not work. There is no solution to it technologically, and this is the problem: is that it's all too easy, and I'm sure we all do it in different ways. I'm sure that I say things on Twitter that are probably not, you know, representative of the truth of the matter.
Oh, you absolutely do.
I do. Yeah, I don't know enough about everything. So sure, I mean, everyone gave him a hard time. It was relatively funny. He didn't take it too badly, and I think he sort of accepted that it was ill thought out. But you're right. There is a problem in that people are just saying technology as an answer to everything. And I went through in my column. I went through, you know, the issues with it. For example, you know, okay, sure, you want to have a knife database where every knife is registered. Well, you know, we don't have serial numbers on knives. Like, guns tend to have serial numbers. It's just so much stuff about it. Unless you're going to get everyone to bring their knives to the police station and have them all etched with a serial number, and then people put in their data into a database. Firstly, that's everyone. So all you've done is generate a national database of people.
Yes.
Because pretty much everyone will have a knife in their home.
Plus, presumably, you know, a dinner table in Kensington Palace would look like a standoff between gangs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're statistically, you'd be like, why is there, you know, Buckingham Palace got so many knives?
Yeah,
swords.
Yes, and indeed,
quite,
yes.
Quite a lot of swords, I should think.
It would be a very forked up situation. Well, do of course let us know any opinions you have on this. You are very welcome, of course, to comment on Ian's views on politics, but I can't guarantee that he will receive them in the manner to which you think they deserve to be received, because we're not a political show. However, all opinions on this, of course, are welcome. hello@techpodcast.uk. Shall we stay talking about police, Ian?
Well, I don't see why not.
Okay. Locations of traffic accidents, road traffic accidents, sexual assaults, other serious crimes, can now be reported to some UK police forces using three-word addresses, such as, and I made these ones up on a map, lake.serve.actor or tigers.gears.arrows. This is because, and these letters, these aren't code words, they're actually the product of a system developed by a company called What3Words. They're a mapping startup that's been around for quite a few years, and it said on Thursday this week, and I know this because I wrote about it this morning, that emergency services are now actually making use of it. And I actually spoke to a couple of people in fact, at the Avon and Somerset Constabulary, who's in charge of deploying their emergency response systems. And he gave me a really great example of how this system can be used. And you have to sort of fundamentally understand what the system is to begin with. So if you think about standing in a field, let's say you're a farmer,
yeah,
or you've had a confrontation with a farmer, and you're standing in a field and you don't know the field that you're in. You don't even know how you got to this field.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know the original intentions of this farmer. And you call the police and they say, where are you? And you say, I'm in a field. And they say, oh, the field. And you say, yes. And you try and describe the trees nearby, or
yeah,
you try and describe the nearest road you're on. It's not necessarily going to get a emergency response to you, whether that's by foot, by car, by helicopter to you, because it physically doesn't have an address.
Yes.
You may very well have a smartphone that has GPS.
Yes.
But if you've not got an ability to send a GPS location to somebody,
yeah,
then...
Well, and also, if you're on the phone and you think you're about to get into trouble,
yeah,
then you don't have time to look at those very complicated coordinates and relay them to someone.
Exactly.
However, three words.
And you may also have an ordnance survey map. You know, ordnance surveys are the mapping, sort of a national mapping. It's not nationalised, but it's a very long British institution. Ordnance survey. You know, where the whole of the UK is divided into grids, and you can give people a grid reference, and that's fine. But again, not much use if you don't have a map with you. So what this system does is it's divided the world up into, I think it's something like 53 trillion squares, and they're 3 meters by 3 meters. So it means that you could stand in a field and give someone a word like I don't know, Ian.Morris.opinions, and it would take you, it might be somewhere in the middle of the Baltic Sea, but it would be a very specific part. And the example that I used in a story, unless it got cut out by an editor, was if you wanted to report a suspicious backpack, you could use one of these codes to specify the exact bench in Hyde Park, which is about 350 acres in size. You could specify the actual location of the bench this bag was on, as opposed to trying to point out that you're just in Hyde Park, or you can see Buckingham Palace from where you're standing. There are lots of places in Hyde Park you can see Buckingham Palace from. So Ian's looking at me as if he's looked up something fascinating.
No, I'm getting the app to find out what three words are around here.
Oh, okay, great, yeah. This allows you that. And the chap that I spoke to from the Avon and Somerset Constabulary, he told me that there'd been one instance where a woman, they'd had a call from a woman who was driving with her child through a village. It was nighttime, the weather was terrible, and she'd veered off the road, I think, into a hedge. Now, she wasn't from the village, she didn't really know where she was, and initially when she was talking to the call operator, they were asking her to describe whether the sounds of an emergency siren sounded like it was getting closer, louder, or quieter and further away. And that was sort of one of the ways they were trying to triangulate where they were. And so one of the supervisors or superintendent or some person said, well, why don't you try the what three words thing?
Yeah.
So she did that. They sent a text to her phone. She pressed a link in the text, which fires up a website, which itself then invokes the GPS tracker, finds where she is, gives her the three words, and she could then just vocally read out the three words over the radio, over the phone, which was then relayed to officers via radio, who typed the three words into the app, which showed her exactly on the map where they were. They went to her. She had minor injuries and was safe.
I mean, this is going to save lives. I mean, I know it sounds... When I heard about it, first of all, I was like, well, I don't really understand the point of this. But that is such a clear explanation of how it could help.
But if you're in a field as well, there was one example from somebody else that I heard of where somebody had been victim of a sexual assault. And again, didn't know where they were, didn't know how they got there. And this system helps them say, well, here are three words. And you know within a 3 by 3 meter area exactly where you are. And that is global. You could literally be in the middle of the Baltic Sea.
Yeah.
You could be behind... Debenhams on a high street, like it doesn't matter. So it's a really fascinating system, and I really do think that there's a lot of room for this to grow and develop. And I do know that they're talking to more emergency services, not just police forces. There are some fire services that are using it. And in fact, I found out from one of the execs at What Three Words that they got the idea because a police force had already done that and had actually found the location of, I think it was a park fire or something, and they tweeted out that they'd actually found this fire because somebody used What Three Words to tell them exactly where they were in some field or something, and that actually gave them the original impetus to do this. So this was a great way of the feature, kind of like hashtags with Twitter didn't invent the use of hashtags.
No,
people started doing hashtags, and then Twitter just sort of adopted that.
Well, most of Twitter's features weren't invented by Twitter. Like, retweets were not a thing.
That's true.
Like, you know, people just decided RT. That they wanted to, you know, give an extra boost to a tweet, and they came up with RT as a way of doing it.
Yeah. So I'm very excited to see how this develops, and we will keep our eye on it. But if you've used What Three Words, I'd love to know what people use it for, because in a built-up area, there's no real great need to use it over and above the existing postal system. We have a very good postal system in the UK. You know, not everywhere has streets. You look at some places in Africa, in, you know, rural places, they don't have an addressing system.
Yes.
There are countries that are using this as their actual way of delivering mail. There's a Caribbean island where there's I want to say, is it Papa John's or It's like a food company, and they specifically use it to deliver pies.
Right.
Because there's no address. And people want pies.
Yeah, they do.
So they deliver pies.
It's very American of you to call them pies. I'm not criticising. I mean, it is a pizza pie.
A pizza? What's a pizza pie?
That's what... It's a song. When the moon... Anyway.
Pizza pie?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like a thing.
What, a type of pizza?
No, well, I mean, I suppose it is. I have a feeling it's kind of like a... Maybe it's a Chicago thing. Because, you know, Chicago is famous for very deep... Mate, you don't like
pizza.
I had
Huel for lunch, so no, I don't know any of this stuff.
The man is hopeless when it comes to things with melted cheese on, aren't you?
A pizza pie? Well, that is news to me. And right. Well, this has thrown me entirely off track because that's just baffling. I have no idea.
But you called it a pie. Where's that come from?
I just assumed they were delivering pies.
Right.
But now thinking that they're a pizza company.
Yeah.
Oh, good Lord. Fair enough.
Well, you've learned something today. Congratulations.
I didn't want to learn that. What a horrible thing to have known. Ian, let's transition like a illegal segue on British roads into some messages from our listeners. And the first message we've got actually follows our conversation last week, at which you were not present, of course.
No.
About Argos that Kate and I were having. And we had some great feedback about this, or rather specifically feedback about what is it people go to Argos for. This came in from Lexi.
Hi, Nate. So about Argos, I was trying to get a mop a couple of weeks ago, in fact a couple of months ago, and it turns out Tesco's, Sainsbury's, Ocado don't deliver mops. There's absolutely nothing you can do to get a mop to your house unless you want to go to some kind of corner store in some dodgy place, hunt for some like dirty mop that's been hanging around there that's got like a price tag on, and then either take it to the office and look super civilized or take it home. And so the only place that I think it's actually viable to get a mop from in Britain is probably Argos.
Mops, Ian. So we also had another message from Andy H in the Discord, who said the last thing he bought from an Argos was a wheelchair. And it really got me thinking, well, yeah, where do you buy wheelchairs from? If you need a wheelchair all of a sudden, where do you go?
Well, it wouldn't occur to me to go to Argos, but I suppose fair enough.
There you go. Argos. Wheelchairs. Mops.
I had no idea it was a possibility.
And now you do. So thank you, Lexi, and thank you, Andy, for giving us your thoughts as well. We also had a message that we've kept for a couple of weeks during Ian's absence. I said actually last week that I think you were in your underground blast-proof turkey farm. I can't remember if it was turkeys or emus.
It's emus.
I was wrong. Sorry. But it is blast-proof, isn't it?
It is blast-proof, yeah.
That's what I thought. So we saved this for when you were back. This related to the conversation we had about your love of the Samsung Dex that sort of makes your phone into a PC if you plug it into a monitor.
Yeah.
Russ wrote in. He said, "Hi, Nate and Ian. Love the podcast. Happy Patreon subscriber." Thank you very much, Russ. Really appreciate it.
Well, can I upsell him to the £100 insulting tier?
Yes, for £150. Ian will let me finish my emails. Russ continues, "I recently switched back from iPhone to Android and opted to buy the Honor View 20 based on its specs and the hole-punch camera and good reviews. It's fantastic for £499. On a side note, I found out after I've got it that Honor and Huawei have also got a desktop mode built into the phone which allows wireless or wired display for either the desktop experience or just to mirror the phone's screen. He says you can Bluetooth a keyboard and mouse into the phone or buy a cheap USB-C dock and you've got a desktop experience. In my limited testing, they also had some pre-built desktop versions of apps and you can also open any normal Android apps too," and he sends a link to a YouTube video, and he says, "For £500, I'm honestly amazed at the amount of power, speed, design, RAM and storage you get. Keep up the good work, Russ." Morris.
Yes.
You know this phone.
Well, I don't know. Well, I reviewed this phone, but I didn't review this aspect of it. I was on a very tight deadline. I didn't really have the chance. But I do have a Mate 20 Pro.
That's the Huawei. Honor is a sub-brand of Huawei.
Considered separate for most purposes, but it is very much Huawei.
And I know Andy, who I think will be on the show next week, actually, he speaks very fondly of Honor. Kevin continues, "You mentioned in your current podcast about giving away your Amazon Echo. Happy to take it off your hands if it's still available." Now, I'm afraid somebody beat you to it who was listening to the show live. So I'm afraid that's gone. However, if you want an Echo Dot, I do believe I have an Echo Dot. So
I'm sure you'll get more Amazon hardware in the future.
I just don't use the Dot
either. I've got to say, I mean, the kids love Amazon Echoes, which is sort of why I keep the show around.
Mm.
But I really just cannot be bothered with it. And I have mine on mute almost all the time.
Well, we talked last week about the reasons we disconnected ours and why I don't use the one we bought anymore. However, I thought this would be a good juncture to let all listeners know that I'm also selling a MacBook Pro and an iPad Pro.
We'll have to front up some cash for that, though, because he's not actually generous enough to give away $3,000 worth of gear.
No, I'm literally selling a MacBook Pro that I bought about 3 months ago and never use. It's a very high spec one. It cost me about $2,500. And an iPad Pro that cost me $1,000, which I'm selling because this morning I bought another one with 4G in it. So I bought a laptop of you,
and I was very happy with the process.
Yeah, I'm a great salesperson.
Yeah.
So true. So anyway, where we go?
Actually, he's not a great salesperson. What he's a drug dealer. Because he said, oh, why don't you come and get this MacBook off me, and you can just try it and see if you like it. And then if you like it, you can pay me.
Yeah, your first article's free that you type
on
it. Yeah,
exactly. He knew full well as soon as I used the thing, I was going to fall head over heels in love with a stupid gold thing.
Very true.
So, yeah, he's like a drug dealer.
Yeah. Except, just for any police listening, I do not deal drugs.
No.
Let's check in with our good friend Tom Merritt over in the US at Daily Tech News Show to hear about what's been going on in the wider world of tech this week. Mr. Merritt.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, we have a lot of discussions about the news from the Game Developers Conference, including whether we think people will want Google Stadia and what it will have to do to succeed as a platform, not just a place that hosts Windows games. Also, Epic Games' Tim Sweeney's making the rounds to convince people to play Epic Games with the Epic Games Store. Some people don't like what he's doing. Also, programmable DNA could solve our storage problems. All that and more coming up at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, of course, to our patrons, you beautiful people keeping us in clean pants. And Ian's got a new shirt on today. He says Noel Gallagher designed it.
No, Liam Gallagher. He didn't design it. It's his label.
That's close enough.
No, really.
It's that. That's where the money goes. That, of course, and new microphones. So thank you for everyone. And if you'd like to become one, of course, do let us know ways in which we can make it more appealing for you. We're going through that review process right now. hello@techpodcast.uk. That's a great place to send us any thoughts. And you can check it out, obviously, the current offerings at patreon.com/UK Tech.
Yes, and please do send us any comments. Our email address is hello@techpodcast.uk, and you can follow us on Twitter @textmessagepod. That will keep you up to date with the most important UK technology headlines throughout the week. And thanks to everyone listening on our free ad-supported feed. If you've a minute to leave us a review on iTunes, it's the best way of supporting us without spending a penny.
It is. We say that every week, but we mean it every week. We talk about the Patreon because, I mean, truth be told, I don't think we've ever said this publicly, right? But the original plan was we were going to end the show at episode 100. Like, our live anniversary show was going to be the last one we did, simply because it takes me about 10 or 12 hours a week, you know, from the very, very first thing I do for the show to the very moment that I walk away from the PC, having published them all.
Yes.
And it just wasn't, the economics didn't add up.
No.
So this, you know, it genuinely has sort of kept us around, kept us motivated, and we certainly don't see ourselves ending the show anytime soon. But the only reason we get to have a listener base where we can convert some people to patrons is because we have a lot of people listening for free.
Yes.
Who just really like it, make it worth our while doing it in the first place and telling people about it. So we genuinely do mean it means as much to us, but we do love it when you leave reviews.
And I encounter people all the time who actually listen to this show and enjoy it. Like, I was chatting to a guy on Twitter about a project he's doing and that I might help him out with, and he was saying, yeah, I'm a listener, I really like it. And I'm, you know, I mean, obviously it means a lot to hear that feedback from people, but I think we also sort of forget that obviously there's a lot of people listening who are just in tech enthusiasts.
Yeah.
But in our industry there are also people who listen to the show who are, you know, who we deal with on a day-to-day basis and actually, you know, enjoy some of what we do, maybe not all of it.
But do you remember, if you remember,
product is in the spotlight or not,
there was that time that I was reporting on an Apple launch for Bloomberg, and I went down to just do some interviews, random people in that have been queuing up overnight, and just pulled someone out, and it turns out he was a listener to the podcast.
Do you think Tim Apple listens to this podcast?
Tim Apple? No,
that's a slightly old, out of date topical joke.
No, I don't think he does.
No, I don't think he does. No. Either. I don't think he has probably as much time to do podcast listening.
No.
But he'd love it if he did.
He's as welcome.
He might want to buy a Mac.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. Anyway, that's enough of that.
Yes,
I'm hungry.
Okay.
From me, Nate Langson,
and me, Ian Morris.
See you in a week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.